Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 682, September 2023.
Welcome back to The Incomparable, everybody. I am your guest host, Chip Sutterth, and alongside this illustrious league of panelists, we're going to discuss what I, you know, we do opening statements on this show every once in a while. Let me put one down right now. Why did we ever need a DC extended universe in the movies when we had a DC animated universe? And I think the most idealized form of that animated universe exists in the show that we're talking about today, Justice League Unlimited. No bloody A, no bloody B. This is JLU, Justice League Unlimited. With me is a fantastic group of panelists, including my one-time professor at the Batman University. Hello, Tony Sindelar.
Hello, Chip. Hello, nerds. Thank you for having me.
Cicero Holmes is also here. Hi, Cicero.
Hey, Chip. How are you? Thank you very much for saving me from those aglets.
They are sinister, after all. Shannon Sutterth is here. Hi, Shannon.
Hola, freakies.
And finally, Monty Ashley. Hi, Monty.
Hi, I'm just here for the guys I'd never heard of.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that Green Lantern? I love Justice League Unlimited, top to bottom. But and the reason I wanted to talk about Justice League Unlimited is I feel like, it, for one thing, when it was announced, I was skeptical. I thought that they were taking my evolved and erudite and mature Justice League and the DC animated franchises, and they were going to Super Friends it. And I had such low expectations for it. And I felt like I was proved wrong. And Justice League Unlimited is on Max along with its sibling series. And you can watch it for yourself. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the broader DC animated universe that came before it. This was pretty much the end of the DC animated universe, and this DC animated universe was begun, of course, with Bruce Timm and Batman, the animated series that began on Fox back in the early 90s. I'm so old. Yeah. And then it was followed up by Superman, the animated series, Batman Beyond, and Justice League. I just wanted to get a quick temperature check for everybody with the all of the hindsight and the experience that we bring to bear. What are your feelings about the DC animated universe now and how you were feeling about it before Justice League and Justice League Unlimited were greenlit?
I love the DC animated universe. I loved Batman, the animated series. I did not get into Batman Beyond. Superman, the animated series, I think has been kind of forgotten, but it's an excellent version of the Superman mythos. When Justice League came along, I was looking forward to it because, you know, it would expand the universe to the seven most popular heroes, or not most popular, but you know what I mean. So then when Justice League Unlimited came along and it was like, now we're just going to throw everything in the DC universe in, I was like, great, this just continues to expand the world and I'm into it. And like I said in my intro, I was most interested in heroes I'd never heard of, like Shining Knight, who's all over Justice League Unlimited, just in the background doing stuff most of the time.
The best way for me to sum it up is the DC animated universe kind of was like Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible 2. They just can't miss. right? Like they everything they shoot, it just lands. And it was, I mean, it was all great from, you know, from the animated series to Superman, Justice League. You talked about Batman Beyond. There's one thing that you forgot, and that is the Zeta Project.
Mm, and Static Shock.
And Static Shock. Well, was Static Shock part of the Bruce Timm? Is it part of this universe?
There's a crossover, but it is not a Bruce Timm show, okay. Which I guess neither is the Zeta Project, but they're based on
I guess. Sorry. They are. Yeah.
I would give it an included because there were enough crossovers involved, and Dwayne McDuffie, who was big in the JLU, was the showrunner for Static Shock, but it is slightly spinoffy. Mm-hmm. It is sort of a Torchwood to Doctor Who.
Yes. Right. There you go.
Yeah, but all of that stuff was great. But I think JLU was probably the best of all of it.
So, big fan of Batman the Animated Series, such that I had my own Batman the Animated Series podcast for a while. But I've always enjoyed that there is this interconnected world that in a lot of ways feels evocative of the interconnected world of the DC Comics. I've watched the Superman Animated Series a couple times. I think it's good. It's not my favorite thing. But Batman the Animated Series is. Batman Beyond, I think, is impressive how much kind of a cultural footprint Batman Beyond has for a TV show that, you know, a cartoon show that was around for three seasons. I think a lot of people are familiar with the Batman Beyond character, given how short-lived that show was. But, you know, Justice League and then the follow-up Justice League Unlimited, I think were kind of the most successful big mainstream, you know, years before we'd have Marvel movies thing where it's like, look, here's a zillion superheroes hanging out together, dealing with particularly world or galaxy spanning problems. Here, we're going to feature characters that are not characters that would ever be big enough to have their own show, let alone their own movie. And we're just going to spend some time with them while your big seven are off in the background doing other stuff. I don't know. I always thought Justice League was just a really cool thing. And I will say, you know, for me as a person coming to these at a somewhat younger age, there was kind of the weird thing where there's a lot of characters that I found through Justice League and Justice League Unlimited way before I would have ever read about them in a comic.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say I still have not encountered some of the farther reaching Justice League Unlimited people in comics, just because I don't specifically read the Justice League titles. Maybe they're there all over the place. But Justice League Unlimited, it does what it says on the tin, Unlimited. You know, the opening sequence is like, look, here's a show that has like 55 characters in it, and they are gonna cram those characters into as many things as possible. There will just be a ton of characters. I will say I had a particular experience of watching the show. I think I was a college student with my roommate, Jeremy, who's a librarian, who's a deep DC Comics fan, and he would give you the annotated thing like, oh, that's so-and-so in the back. That's so-and-so in the background. And someday Jeremy will release his Jeremy librarian commentary for the TV show so you can experience it the way I did while eating cold cereal. But for now, you can read Wikipedia while you're watching Justice League Unlimited.
In my case, I'm old enough that I was watching Super Friends way, way back in the distant ages, and I was a Wonder Woman girl, was, you know, reading the comics way back, in elementary and middle school, and drifted away from it. And then I met this guy and started dating him, and he was big into comics and, you know, was showing me all kinds of titles. And we started watching Batman the Animated Series. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved just the masterful way it worked with animation, with reimagining the characters, and so forth. So we kept watching. Superman, I liked. Yeah, okay. I really like Batman Beyond. That just, you know, as Tony said, the way they absolutely, that they were able to craft a whole new mythos within the bigger mythos and have it make such an impression. Really grabbed my attention. And when finally we got to the Justice League, I was okay. Finally, Wonder Woman, finally. Because, you know, I wanted to see my favorite character. I was not sure about Justice League Unlimited. Again, you know, remembering the Super Friends and, you know, it was, how are they going to do this? But I really liked, it is almost seamless the way they went from Justice League to opening the curtains wider and letting more people in, continuing to have these really strong story arcs within the different seasons, and still incorporating all of these minor characters, you know, some of which you might have seen, some of which you might not have seen, making more connections. But I think Batman Beyond still holds my heart, but I greatly admire what Justice League Unlimited was able to do overall.
I love Batman Beyond, but I absolutely heart with the passion of a thousand suns, Justice League Unlimited. That's my purest level of DCAU for me. So Batman, the animated series, kicked things off. There were only two non-Batman related characters who ever showed up in that run, Zatanna and, of all things, Jonah Hex in a flashback episode.
Yep.
Amazing. Yep. And then Superman, the animated series, really opens things up. I think that it is harder sometimes to tell Superman stories than Batman stories because the character is so much more powerful. You need more things to challenge or contrast with him as opposed to Batman, who is just this guy, you know? So you had characters like Dr. Fate and Aquaman and the Flash in a classic Superman versus Flash race showing up in that. And it seemed like, you know, the groundwork is being laid there for the possibility of a Justice League series. Instead, following up from Superman, the animated series, we get Batman Beyond, which has the first ever appearance of the Justice League. It's the future league. It is called Justice League Unlimited in that episode. Starro is in it. It is kind of wild. Then I believe that the suits finally turned to Bruce Timm and said, we've got all of this IP. Let's really do something with it. Cartoon Network wants a Justice League series. What do you say? And so we got Justice League Limited. seven characters: Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter, Green Lantern, John Stewart, Hawk Girl, not Hawkman, and The Flash. And they carried two seasons with a few guest stars. And I was not happy with Justice League season one. It was appointment television for me, because I love these characters and I'm a comic book nerd. But the pacing, the weakness of Superman, who they always would knock out early in the episode just to demonstrate how tough the villain was. Justice League season one wasn't working for me. I thought the stories got more robust and stronger in the second season, but I was in that weird place where I felt like Justice League could be better, and then I heard about what was going to happen with Justice League Unlimited, and I was super skeptical. How did you all feel about the predecessor series, Justice League?
I thought the original Justice League. I'm kind of with you on season one, Chip. I think it was just the fact that they were like, oh, hey, we've got all of these heroes together. And I think it is similar. It was a criticism that I remember having watching the Superman show and then watching the Justice League show kind of right after it, was that, Superman was kind of a punk. because he was always, you know, getting his butt kicked, but it was, again, the reason they had to do that was because he was so powerful. And it always made it kind of dumb, right? Like, you knew that ultimately, like, all right, well, how powerful really is Superman? So can he just, like, be powerful and just, like, you know, make the episode about how Superman beat somebody up and then they ate shawarma afterwards, right? Like, why can't we do that? So we got a lot of that in season one. And then in season two, they were like, oh, wait a minute, we can actually do stories where it's not just about, like, who the monster of the week is. And we can figure some other things out, some other complexities out. And, you know, leading into the story arc at the end of season two of Justice League, that kind of rolled right into JLU season one, which is kind of like Justice League season three. Mm-hmm. The thing that I love about the most, when I think about the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, I think about kind of them as the same thing. And the most indelible mark from the show for me is at the end of season three is one of the last things that's said is fixing this issue that I've had with Superman from the beginning, which is, you know, I live in this world made out of cardboard, right? And he finally gets to let loose. And I really love that they were able to fix that part of Superman for me.
Yeah, I mean, I like Justice League. I think it certainly they built upon it, and Justice League Unlimited revels in the fact that some of the B-list and C-list superheroes are actually really fun and interesting, and you can tell stories that are happening while other people are saving the world or whatnot. And, you know, some of the, you know, looking at lists of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited episodes, my favorite episodes are primarily from the Justice League Unlimited episode list. I would say, you know, one of the few episodes that has stuck with me from Justice League. I really like the episode where they go to the alternate world where the Justice League is evil. They're the Justice Lord and they're like authoritarian fascists. And there's some interesting plays on revealing the dynamics between them. But I will say, I think one of the things that Justice League got really good that then Justice League Unlimited was able to go further with was the friendship between the Flash and Green Lantern as a duo. I think that's always an interesting thing in big superhero team ups is how do we rejigger things so that we don't have seven protagonists who are all bouncing off each other. And, you know, Batman is probably never going to be the comic relief. But guess what? Flash, the way Flash acts is different when he's part of a group of seven versus when you make a movie or show just about the Flash. And he's the hero of the story versus the comic relief. So there are some things that they figured out there, but there is a lot of like, let us introduce things that, you know, are just world destroying or, you know, something scary is happening in the ocean. Spoiler, it's going to be Aquaman related because they want to introduce Aquaman. but yeah, the storytelling in Justice League Unlimited is several notches above the average storytelling in just Justice League Limited.
And the way they play with the characters, you know, you mentioned how, you know, Flash is a bit different when he's part of the Justice League versus when he's on his own. You get some of that with Batman as well.
Yes.
I mean, the contrast, and it's sort of a DC animated universe thing overall, but, you know, Batman in the comics in the Justice League is never really fully part of the group. He mm-hmm. is, you know, standing to the side. He is keeping an eye on everybody. He's got ways to take down every single member, except Wonder Woman, apparently, because he's prepares for all eventualities. And we don't get that. We get more. He's more of a leader. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not in the thick of it necessarily, but he is there. He is present. And willing to jump in when he needs to, and, you know, takes off on his own when he sees something that has to be taken care of. And it works better for the TV show, especially, you know, with audiences, younger kids, of course, you know, were a big target for all of these shows. So they didn't get into the nitty gritty of the comics in the same way. And I think that's a very good thing.
There's a slice of just a workplace comedy is inserted into Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, which I really like. I mean, there's numerous scenes that take place like in cafeterias, you know, I guess between shifts or whatever. But yeah, definitely one of my takeaways is like, what are these different superheroes like as coworkers? And I don't think, I mean, I'm heavily invested in Batman, but I don't think I want to work with Batman.
The conceit of Justice League Unlimited, where everybody is on the watchtower all the time, kind of makes me wonder who's fighting crime.
Yeah.
It's like in Across the Spider-Verse, where you discover there's no Spider-Man anywhere but here.
Yeah, that was Green Arrow's question.
They're all in the clubhouse all the time.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Speaking of, I want to mention Green Arrow right from the start, because that first episode of Justice League Unlimited really sets the tone for everything that's going to go forward for the next 3 years. And it's one of the best, I think it's one of the best first episodes of a cartoon series ever. Just to recap that, Justice League was exclusively two-parters. With the exception of one brief holiday special. So you had this core cast of seven, and every story was a two-parter. So if the story could have been done shorter, no, it had to be padded.
Nope.
Justice League Unlimited, every story is start to finish, done in 30 minutes up until you get to the season finales, when you have to do the two be continued thing.
And they're going to introduce some characters that you've never heard of in the first five episodes.
Yes.
unless you're a pretty deep DC Comics nerd.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you get Green Lantern plucked off of the Earth in the middle of a case by Green Lantern, brought up to the new Watchtower satellite, confronted with more than 50 superhero characters. Nemesis was there. Creeper was there. Aztec was there. And they immediately have a crisis that is happening in a communist Asian country that is in lockdown. A nuclear powered bad guy is rampaging, and Green Arrow is there to be the what about the regular people conscience of the show, and he's established of that in that first 30 minute episode. An ad hoc team of the familiar Justice League or Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Supergirl, and Captain Atom go down there. They clash. They have personality conflicts. They hit a crisis point. Green Arrow goes off on his own. They figure out how to gel and resolve the crisis. They have arguments. Crucially, they have arguments over whether they should be interfering in this sovereign nation that does not want them there. And they find their way into, yes, we have to, we're superheroes. There's a brief moment when Supergirl threatens one of the military people, and then they resolve the situation and come back up, and it's done in 30 minutes. I went through that quick synopsis first to highlight how important I think the character Green Arrow is in this series, even though he's not in all the episodes, and two, just compare and contrast just how tight that story is compared to the two seasons of Justice League that came before it. Thoughts about how these episodes worked with these different kinds of characters coming in and the points of view that were given that these characters didn't have a lot of screen time all told in those 30 minutes.
Yeah, I'm kind of like who said, I think Monty said it or maybe Tony said it about like a lot of it for me was watching and learning characters that I had not seen before. So like, you know, getting to see them on screen or you know, I knew very little about them. So I was always excited about JLU because of the fact that I knew that there was a high chance that I was going to see whether a hero or a villain or both that I had not, you know, really known about before. And you know, I'm more of a, I've always kind of been more of a Marvel comics reader. So I, you know, I know that universe a little bit better. But I I always felt like the rogues in and the heroes in DC were always a little bit more zany, even if they're mundane, like Calendar Man, you know. But it's just like, oh, you know what? So that was always really cool. One thing that I think is interesting, I think you're right, Chip, right? That the
those are my favorite words in the language, by the way.
Yeah, no problem. You know, I'm happy to help. So the fact that Green Arrow kind of is like the avatar for us. But I never thought that I would say that, oh yeah, you know, paragon of the people, billionaire Oliver Queen it rolls right off the tongue. But I think
he can't fly. That's what makes it
different. Absolutely.
That's basically the two tiers of heroes on Justice League. Right, do you have the power of flight or not?
Right. So I do.
Just like us.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I do think that one of the things that happened for them was in being surprised that they were getting this new series, the JLU, that they learned a lot from the two previous seasons. Because, they did almost 50 episodes for Justice League seasons 1 and 2. And they were they knew, one, that they were only getting orders for 13 for JLU. And they learned a lot about how to tell these stories. And I think they knew a little bit better what stories they wanted to tell, what arcs they wanted to create, and they were able to do that right away.
And one other thing that they were able to, I think, hit right out of the gate was, you know, given this expanded cast of characters, who can we play with? I mean, you've got in this first episode, you've got Green Lantern, who is in charge, Captain Atom, who is the sensible choice given the mission. You know, he's picked specifically because he can directly affect whatever this nuclear anomaly is. Green Arrow is just kind of along for the ride because he wanted to go home, but he didn't want to take the transporter. And they're like, yeah, we'll drop you off when we're done. And then Supergirl, who is, you know, basically being treated like this, you know, little teenage brat who needs to, you know, I think John Jones who says, she needs some experience. Take her. And instead, you know, she's sniping. She's being a brat. She's sticking her tongue out at Captain Atom and going off and charging off on her own as part of the story. So you've got all of these different personalities playing against each other, even as they try to make a cohesive team and address the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something about how tight the episodes are in Justice League Unlimited with the, you know, and they're not even 30 minutes. That's 30 minutes with commercials. They're probably right. Like 20, 21 minutes of actual story. And
they're practically blipverts.
Yeah, you know, whereas the every episode of Justice League being a two-parter is these sometimes kind of floppy 44 minutes of story. And there's something also about, you know, each episode, it's like they had all of the DC characters on little cards and they just pick some names out of a hat. And it's like, okay, these are the four people that are going to be in this story. And like, I don't know, we'll pick from another hat. It's like there's a mean robot is the problem this episode. But, the mean robot is not the interesting part of any of the Justice League Unlimited episodes. It's the interactions between whatever two or three or four characters are going to be assigned to that mission, which is unusual, I feel like, you know, for animation, especially for superhero stories, that it's so personality driven and that the story is kind of, you know, the thing that they have to save the world from or whatever bad guy is there this week is not as interesting as like, what are the interactions between these different people? Have they worked together? What are their, like, how do they feel about their role of being a hero? What does it mean to get along with people? We definitely, I mean, there's a lot to mine from the idea that, you know, we have these superheroes who are used to being solo operators and now they have to be in a group of three or four, and some of them are fine at that and some of them very much are not, or grapple with that in interesting ways. But to me, there's just a fun aspect of that as opposed to the other stories that feel a lot more by the numbers. These have some kind of spontaneity and randomness to them that I think they work better as stories.
And that was something that I was going through and reminding myself of the different episodes. And it's kind of funny that, you know, we have this really interesting introduction in the first episode. The next two episodes are just original seven characters. Mm-hmm. You've got Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman in episode two. And then...
which was a fantastic remount of Alan Moore's For the Man Who Has Everything.
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. Which is what it was called, yeah.
Yes. Yep. And then in the next one, it's the one where they get zapped into kids, and it's Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and I'm blanking on the fourth one. So the next couple of episodes are, you know, focused kind of on the core characters, and then we get into expanding again.
Leftover Justice League scripts.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cicero said a Monster of the Week episode, and I felt like there was some disparagement in that phrase, but I really love the Justice League Unlimited Monster of the Week episodes because, like you guys are saying, the arc is in the characters, mm-hmm. and that can carry through even while they're fighting Starro or Amazo or whatever nonsense is being thrown at them. That's all I have to say is just I like the short episodes because, you know, I like season three, right? There's an episode called Patriot Act where Stripe, Stargirl, Vigilante, Shining Knight, and Green Arrow are in charge of fighting something.
Oh, my God. Yes.
And it's so much fun. And everything doesn't need to be part of a dang arc.
Mm-hmm. No. And that is one of the glorious things about JLU, even for people who don't know these characters chapter and verse, because you're an obsessive data hogging fan. Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. There are all these injuries like that group, that grouping of heroes there was a takeoff of the classic Seven Soldiers of Victory characters from older DC comics and things like that.
Of course it was. What else would it be?
I mean, nobody would know. Nobody would have any reason to know that, but they do that. They have characters like I mentioned, I think, Nemesis before in the background. I don't think he ever has anything to do, but. Somebody was familiar with this 1970s character and was like, I've just got to get him in a shot there somewhere. So all of these great mixed matches of heroes against a monster of the week, but also, in contrast to my expectations when this show started, there are story arcs, to be found in Justice League Unlimited. For the most part, they tried to do a complete done-in-one story, but there are two major plot arcs that go through the three seasons of JLU, and I wanted to trot out the conversation about the Cadmus Project and the tension between this army of superheroes that has sky gods in space on a satellite with a wave motion gun, dispatching heroes down to Earth, and at least some folks on Earth feeling very, very uncomfortable with all of that. And it turns into a who watches the Watchmen kind of situation. So I wanted to talk a little bit. The Project Cadmus story arc crops up in some early episodes in season one before turning into a real through line in season two. Nowadays, with The Boys and Watchmen and Invincible and other sort of critical evaluations of what superheroes would be like in the so-called real world, here we have that issue coming up on a show that was airing on Cartoon Network with your with the Super Friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that we got that through line in there because, you know, you're sitting and you're watching it. I mean, one of the great things, Chip, thanks very much for proposing us do this because it gave me an opportunity to go back and rewatch this show that I genuinely love. Watching the Cadmus arc specifically, really allowed me to appreciate how ahead of his time that arc was in terms of, you know, like this, it's the one of those postmodern superhero arcs, right? Where we can have cynicism about the heroes that we have. In fact, you know, in one of the scenes, Superman's fighting somebody in Metropolis, and they could have easily not fought in Metropolis, but he decided, oh yeah, it's in the final episode, but he decided that he was going to fight Darkseid and show how powerful he was by punching Darkseid through, like, punched him up in the air, and then he hit him through like 17 skyscrapers, and then he flew around and he basically caught him in the air and then slammed him down into the ground and made this giant pit into the concrete. And this, you know, you're sitting there like, dude, couldn't you have just like taken him out to the country a little bit further and just like beaten him up on the side of a mountain or in the grass? Like, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Like, you've caused a lot of damage. So like that level of cynicism, I had a little bit of that when I was watching it initially, but it also allowed me to think, like, you know, is this show really just for kids, or is it for the kids that will be adults, or is it for the adults that are already watching this with their kids? There are a lot of layers there. Man, it's a good show.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is your relative proximity to post 9/11 stuff informing it. But there is definitely that thing where, you know, you read Justice League comics in the 90s and it's like, yeah, there's a big space station hovering over Earth where all the superpowered people hang out, and they make decisions that impact world events. And that's good. And then, yeah, Justice League Unlimited kind of poses the question of like, how would people feel if there is? And I mean, I think they even raised, it's like the space station is maybe secret sometimes. You know, does the average person know that there's a satellite in orbit around Earth where very important decisions about the world are being made by unelected leaders? Hey, the guy handling all the assignments is maybe from Mars, and maybe we don't talk about that much because that makes you uncomfortable. But yeah, that starts to creep in there in a way that I don't think was present in, certainly not in earlier DC animated stuff, but in superhero stuff in general before that, with the major exception of Watchmen, in terms of like, do we, you know, what if we didn't love all superheroes and take their authority as benign and always good for us? Yeah.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as that story arc starts to build, not only do we start getting some episode-to-episode continuity going on, but they also do some callbacks to Superman, the animated series, a little bit of stuff with Batman Beyond with a Zeta drone and things like that. Especially, there was a supporting character in Superman, the animated series, Professor Emil Hamilton, Superman's tech buddy. And he... Towards the end of that series, Supergirl is injured, and Superman actually threatens and scares Emil Hamilton into trying to save Supergirl's life. And they actually pull that forward into Justice League Unlimited. And spoilers for a decades-old cartoon, but Hamilton is affected by that incident so much that he joins the government conspiracy against the superheroes and creates a homicidal clone of Supergirl that we will not call Power Girl. We'll call her Galatea, but So here is in service to this conspiracy storyline that's been building is connective tissue to the all these older series. Did you all appreciate that connective tissue? Did you just sort of appreciate and go on? Or did you have moments of like, boy, you guys are really making this thing complicated now?
I think this is a place where Justice League handled it well in terms of there are all these connections, but it didn't feel like perhaps what the MCU is kind of suffering from, where it feels like there's homework that you have to do, in that the connections are there and you'll appreciate them if you notice them, but they're not usually kind of load-bearing critical things where if you don't recognize the connection, the episode doesn't make any sense or the meaning of it is lost on you. So I think they thread that relatively well, in that there's stuff that rewards the repeat viewer and the person who's seen all the episodes, but also if you just watch a bunch of random episodes from season two, they're pretty enjoyable without necessarily having seen all the homework beforehand.
Monty, Shannon, what did you two think of the whole Cadmus arc and the stuff that went on into making that?
I definitely appreciated its presence because, you know, as others have mentioned, getting to a point where addressing some of, you know, if superheroes were really a thing, you know, I think some of these governments would be trying to plan against them. I think some of these governments would be trying to figure out how to control or be ready to defend, you know, things like that. My main appreciation for the Cadmus arc, honestly, is its climax when they finally are facing how Lex Luthor and Brainiac have managed to become one, and everybody is down except for the Flash, who has been kind of the goofball, who has not been in every episode. It takes like three or four episodes before we even see him. And there's this sort of feeling like, you know, yeah, he's fast. He's useful. But they a lot of people tend to classify him a little bit more in the younger kids category, even though he's one of the original seven. And he's the one who takes down Lex Luthor and Brainiac by running around the world so fast that his terminal velocity is able to rip apart Brainiac's armor. That is a moment that no matter how many times I see it, no matter how many times I rewatch the episode, or no matter how many times it comes up in a YouTube playlist, I punch the air.
That shot, that first person perspective shot of him running past the pyramids and stuff like that.
Just to bring him to the level of, you know, yes, you know, put him in his element and he will tear you down like a god.
The actual arc for me is pretty bland because I feel like I've seen what if superheroes were bad people kind of a lot, especially in the modern world where it's all people can do with Invincible and the Boys and all that stuff. But the Cadmus arc was the key thing that brought the new Question into my life.
Yes.
So I'm going to talk about how great the Question is, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And also Amanda Waller, I mean, who at first seems like this, you know, absolute horrible, hard-nosed, you know, even if she does work for the government, villain. And she develops nuance over the series as well.
Yeah. But I do want to go... Monty, you opened the door. I want you to walk through it. Let's talk for a moment about how great the Question is.
Okay, so the Question was created by world-class weirdo Steve Ditko. he, of course, created Spider-Man, and he is a great comic book creator. When he was working with Charlton Comics, he started getting kind of weird and objectivist. He made Mr. A, who I don't understand what his whole deal is, but he seems like he's an Ayn Rand character. And the Question was like that. Then DC bought Charlton Comics and Alan Moore changed characters. So Rorschach from Watchmen is a lot like the Question. But then Justice League Unlimited took the Question and made him good for the first time. He's such a weirdo. Like the line about aglets from the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Making him an obsessed conspiracy nut who's right about some things and wrong about some things. He's so fun.
And then they have him and Huntress.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a pairing that feels like it was picked out of a book.
Yeah, but it works eventually.
It works beautifully.
And that, I believe that first episode is the only Justice League Unlimited episode written by Gail Simone, who's written some amazing comics. Mm. I think that's one of my favorite episodes of the show.
Yeah. We've talked about Green Arrow and Question. Are there any other characters outside of the core seven that really stood out to you, especially in these first two seasons, as just really delightful?
Black Canary.
Black Canary. I would say Booster Gold would be at the top of my list.
Yes. So let's talk about Booster Gold for a second, that episode. If I had my druthers, we'd talk about all 39 episodes individually. But so Booster Gold is a character created by Dan Jurgens, only had like a 25-issue run of the comic before he basically found his identity as a comic relief character in the Justice League International comic books. And he is the character who nobody knows, who everybody thinks is Green Lantern. And he doesn't have anything to do in any other episode, but he gets a spotlight episode. And Tony, take it away. What's so great about Booster Gold and that Booster Gold episode?
I mean, I guess, Booster Gold is the most comic relief of Justice League characters. If you're not familiar with Booster Gold, and I wasn't, the premise of Booster Gold is that he is not like somebody who wants to be a hero to do the right thing, who, got bit by a radioactive booster and now has superpowers. He is basically like a time traveling con man. He's a guy from the future, so he has future technology. He frequently has a robot named Skeet that helps him out with stuff, and he basically has traveled to our time so that his technology makes him super powerful because he wants to be like a celebrity by being a superhero. He sees being a superhero as like the ticket to fame and fortune and things like that. I guess, unfortunately, he traveled to a time when there's like a superhero on every block and there's, the Justice League is he is a joke, and the Justice League kind of knows he's a joke, and he is frequently basically assigned duties that are kind of demeaning because he's not reliable and people are not impressed by him. And because people see through him, he frequently, I think, has a kind of weird dynamic with Batman where Batman is not impressed by Booster Gold. So in the greatest story never told, specifically, like the Justice League is in the background dealing with some world ending threat, and Batman assigns Booster Gold crowd control. So like it's his job to just keep people back. But then they, so they tell an episode about what happens with that and what's going to go on with that. And it's just like, let's do an episode where we focus on a character that you probably never heard of before and tell an interesting side story that's happening while the Justice League is off, dealing with the main action in the background. The Booster Gold pops up in a lot of other DC animated stuff since then. This is, he's from the comics, but this was certainly my introduction to him. And he's just, there is this kind of dynamic of he is kind of a scummy, fame-seeking celebrity wannabe who also, learns that, saving people is the right thing to do when you have, superpowers and it is being a good person has a reward as well as beyond fame and fortune. But yeah, almost always played for a joke.
I love the fact that we got Wildcat.
Who's,
he's a JSA member and they, they brought him back and he is still kind of the, he's still kind of like a gumshoe, what do they call those guys? Just kind of like he came out of a detective novel. I loved the fact that they were able to keep that same characteristic for the character as we went through. He was in he was Black Canary's mentor in in JLU and I guess season two premiere, The Cat and the Canary. We get to see a really good episode between, you know, GA, Green Arrow, Black Canary, his new boo, and Wildcat. So, you know, I love that. And then as a result of that particular episode, we wind up having a through line through the rest of that season and I guess through the series, because we go back to hang out or run into Roulette a few more times after that premiere episode.
Yeah, I love that Wildcat's thing is just that he's a retired boxer, but also he's trained
just dresses
all
like
of,
a cat.
Right.
He's also trained all of the best fighters in the DC universe.
Right.
Like, that's why I like Black Canary, is she's a trained fighter. Oh, she also has a superpower that will knock you out immediately, but she preferred to just kick you a lot.
Right.
I was just looking through the cast list as we were talking about some of these rare or obscure DC characters that were brought in. And it's reminded me how well this, how well the voice acting has always been in the DC animated universe. Hat tip to casting director Andrea Romano.
Yep.
But
oh yeah,
these characters that we've been talking about: Booster Gold, voiced by Tom Everett Scott from That Thing You Do; Wildcat, James Farina from what was it? Crime Story. Right. Dennis Farina, excuse me. Felix Faust is Robert England.
Well, you got J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons as right. just a random general, you know, right. General Wade Eiling, you right. know, just yeah, we can get J.K. Simmons. Why not? It's a really well cast cartoon. They took advantage of every voice actor that they could get. CCH Pounder as Amanda yes. Waller is incredible, and the voice direction is superb. None of them feel like drop-in celebrities. They're actually doing voice acting.
My favorite scene in the entire series involves an in-joke about voice
yes.
acting talent. If I yes. could just go over it really quickly.
Absolutely. That's season three, right?
That, yes, it is. It is, of course, in The Great Brain Robbery.
One of my favorite episodes.
when Lex Luthor, normally voiced by the great Clancy Brown, has switched brains with The Flash, normally voiced by the great Michael Rosenbaum. Michael Rosenbaum is now, he's still the voice, but now he's playing Lex Luthor. And of course, Michael Rosenbaum played Lex Luthor in Smallville. And the great joke is he looks in the mirror, takes his mask off and says, I have no idea who this is.
That's great.
Yeah, I don't know if they just dreamed of having that moment all along and wrote the episode to fit the voice cast or what, but that's just a absolute shining light there. That was the third season. So they did the Cadmus story arc. They wrapped it up, had a dramatic beatdown with Luthor and Brainiac to close out season two. And then they did an epilogue for the entire DC animated universe
yeah.
with the season two finale, literally called Epilogue, which is the story of Terry McGinnis from Batman Beyond. He's about 10 years older. He looks completely different.
This is matured. The one episode where if you hadn't watched other stuff, you would be like, what is going on?
Exactly.
because yeah. this episode is basically like, we never got to do a real last episode for Batman Beyond. Right. So we're doing it as a Justice League Unlimited episode.
Right.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. They Star Trek Enterprised it.
Yeah, they totally did.
Except that this was good.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's true.
I really did like it, and it had some lovely homages to the original Batman the Animated Series right at the end.
Yep.
And in scene, the series is over. Wait, Cartoon Network wants another season.
classic Babylon 5 problem.
Yeah. And so you'd think I would have learned my lesson now, but I find out about what the plans are for season 3 of Justice League Unlimited, and they're doing the freaking Legion of Doom. They're doing freaking Challenge of the Super Friends. I see art on the internet and they are recreating the skull-faced headquarters in the swamp from the 1970s. And
Chip,
I'm like,
you are obsessed with Super Friends, and I'm stepping in right now. What do you have against Super Friends?
I am a 52-year-old man who does not want to appear like he is enjoying childish things as I watch my superhero cartoons.
Fair enough. Continue.
Shush you. The thing is, if they were going to do it, they did it pretty damn well. You know, that's the thing. I mean, the Legion of Doom story arc is, you know, really interesting because they get into the infighting. Like, of course, this set of villains is not going to get along and fall into lockstep behind Luthor for every attempt
this
to take over the world.
This is what happens when you have a super genius and a super genius gorilla in the same workplace. There's going to be tension.
And an idiot zombie who can't die.
Sinestro's often in the background there, and he doesn't have any lines, and I'm like, what are you putting up with these people,
right,
Sinestro?
Yeah.
You got a magic ring.
What's in it for him? Go ahead. Go ahead, Shannon.
No, I was just pointing out, you know, and then the Ultimen was a really, you know, interesting, cool takeoff on, you know, bless their hearts, you know, all of those characters that Super Friends came up with just to answer the diversity issue.
Right.
They did something cool and interesting with it.
Thank God they didn't call Long Shadow Apache Chief.
Right, yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
But I do want to get some other thoughts about that third season.
Well,
about that.
So I love the fact that we had the Legion of Doom because it was a callback to the Super Friends and you know, I'm young enough. I'm experienced enough to have seen those as well. But the really funny thing about the season is that the Justice League didn't do anything this season, right? They didn't do anything. They didn't break up the Legion of Doom. They never even found the headquarters, right? Like, there was nothing that the Justice League actually did to stop the Legion of Doom. They just kind of Keystone Cops their way into winning.
You think that Watchtower would have at least could look for things.
We don't scan swamps. Not in the budget.
Wasn't the Watchtower gone by then?
No, it was. Well, that's Superman. Superman got overruled.
It's still there, but they've also got a Hall of Justice. An embassy on the ground as well.
I was at San Diego Comic-Con in a Justice League Unlimited panel when they previewed the first episode of season 3, and everybody in that panel, including me, lost their minds at the reveal of the Legion of Doom.
Yes.
We were all so excited.
Yes.
Like, no hesitation, no, oh no, this was all, yes, let's go.
Yeah.
Legion of Doom, heck yes.
Well, and I think the Legion of Doom, they pull off well. I think they hit that balance perfectly in terms of, you know what, a lot of comic book villains are goofy and not that threatening, and maybe they should be thugs working for Lex Luthor on whatever hijinks he has that week. Because, like, Polaris, I'm not intimidated by Polaris, but Dr. Polaris. He went to medical school. But, you know, he can be a lackey for somebody else's plan. That's fine.
Yeah, we wound up losing. So I think in season 3, we lost Batman's Rogues Gallery.
Yes, there's kind of a thing where I forget which Batman stuff was being developed, but basically, like, Batman disappears heavily from the world of animated media in general. I think for things that never actually got released, but there was, like, there went from being a lot of Batman to a Batman drought.
Right.
It was what angry people on Usenet called the Bat Embargo. And I may have been one of those angry people because in part they had the Batman series with the character voiced by Ray Romano that was sort of happening at the same time. And they had to do all kinds of negotiations to get Batman and the Batmobile to stay in the show. But whereas you had Alfred and the Batcave and the Joker in Justice League unadorned, all you got was Kevin Conroy and mm-hmm. and in seasons 1 through 3 of Justice League Unlimited, and that's it, and you're going to like it. I think they even had Dr. Hugo Strange at the Cadmus table at one point, and some suit noticed that, and that was the end of mm-hmm. that. Mm. I'm sorry, my attention to detail has taken me down a rabbit hole again.
What rabbit hole? Right. Please go on.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
We're all very interested.
Yes, we're in the hole with you. The call's coming from inside the house.
Other thoughts about the Legion of Doom season and the wrap-up that included the return of one dark side and the anti-life equation?
Well, it's very comic booky in a good way that in the end, guess what? They're going to need some of the they're going to need Lex Luthor and some of the other villains to help take out Darkseid.
And I did the same thing.
Yeah. You know, that works. It's they live there. They can't, you know, they can't conquer the earth if outside forces conquer the earth, or they can't rob a bank if the bank is destroyed. So it's, you know, they may be villains, but they're still Terrans. I don't know. So get off my earth.
I like the dark side stuff because it is the Jack Kirby fourth world stuff, and it's done really well. Like, in general, starting with Batman the Animated Series, I feel like the DC Animated Universe is the best version of every yes. DC character. And that's definitely true for the fourth world stuff. Like, Granny Goodness in the comic books is kind of dumb. Put Ed Asner's voice on Granny Goodness, now you've got something.
Yeah. They really knew how to shine every potato that they were given. You know, I it is tricky in that... you know, dark side stories have been adapted a lot, like too often. It shows up in a lot of different animated shows and animated movies. And so I am tired of seeing dark side, but this was my first time seeing dark side. And so it was great.
Yeah. Wasn't this basically, I think, the end of season 2 was supposed to be the wrap up of all of like, the Batman stuff, all the DCAU stuff up until that point. They didn't think they were getting a third season. But I felt like Destroyer, the end of Justice League Unlimited, end of season 3, was also kind of a soft wrap on Superman, The Adventures of Superman, mm-hmm. With Darkseid. Because Darkseid came out of nowhere at the end of this, right? Like, you know, we're in episode 12 alive, and then all of a sudden, you know, Lex does some Lex thing where he's obsessed with trying to get Brainiac back so he can have this ultimate power. But then, Darkseid comes out of nowhere. Like, I felt a lot like in this season, there wasn't a lot. They were surprised by the fact that they were getting this third season. And they didn't necessarily have a story. They didn't have an arc that they really wanted to go on. So they just kind of created one. It was like, hey, you know, why don't we talk about the Legion of Doom? And we'll do some Legion of Doom stuff. And we can't use the Joker. So why don't we use, you know, since we can't lean into the Batman's Rogues Gallery, why don't we lean into the Flash's Rogues Gallery? And we'll get General Grodd in there. We'll get Captain Boomerang and Mirror Master. And we'll do some goofy things with these guys. And it'll be fun. And we'll Legion and Doom it up. And, you know, but it'll always be about Lex and Superman. And, like, whether or not Superman's going to have, like, an anti-hero turn or something like that. Just kind of spurned on by Superman, I mean, you know, by Lex Luthor. But who else can we get in there to kind of give Superman his moment of closure? Oh yeah, Darkseid. Cause yeah, right. Like, and you know, and again, I'll call back to, you know, to Destroyer, that, you know, that particular moment where Superman is finally like, yeah, you know, I feel like I live in a world made out of cardboard, and I always have to hold back. You know, I always have to think about whether or not, if I'm, you know, if I hit somebody too hard that they're going to die. And, you know, I'm constantly trying not to kill people. But I don't have to worry about that with you. You can take it. So I'm going to do it. And you know, and we finally get Superman just, you know, unfettered Superman Unlimited. And, you know, and then he destroys Metropolis or wherever the hell they happen to be, because he'd like all the skyscrapers now have a dark size hole in the middle of their buildings. And then, you know, like Broadway is like, it's got
so but, much property damage, right,
so right, much property damage.
Right, right.
But who winds up saving the day in that one? Again, spoilers for a decades-old cartoon,
right.
But the one and only Lex Luthor.
Absolutely.
You know, so again, that's great writing, great performance by Clancy Brown. And even though this was sort of an extra season for the DC Animated Universe and for Justice League Unlimited itself, I thought it was just a really satisfying conclusion. Speaking of concluding, we need to start wrapping up this podcast. To do that, I wanted to ask you all for a couple of favorite characters, favorite episodes. If you want to encourage some listeners to give Justice League Unlimited a shot, you could obviously start with episode one on Max, but if there is a favorite story that you want to trot out or favorite characters that people should focus on, who would you recommend?
The question is, so yeah, you know, Question Authority is a great one from season two. Just so you can get a sense of just how out there this particular show can get, while also knowing that, yeah, Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman and the Flash are all in it. That's a great one. One thing that I just want to say is I want to know the story. I wish there was an episode just strictly about the people that work there. And we kind of got one of that in Task Force X, the hardest episode to pronounce. But yeah, just like there's all these people that work on the watchtower. They're just regular folks. How the hell did they get that job? Like, what's the interview process to get the job,
right?
and you know, how much do they pay? Like, I
Justice see. League Unlimited, Lower Decks,
right? Mm. Right. JLULD. Mm.
I would say it's probably not a good episode to start with, but one of my favorite episodes that I would put on a short list if you didn't want to watch all 39. It's one of the rare two-parters, is the Once in Future thing, which mm-hmm. involves time travel yeah. hijinks, and they both travel to the Old West and then forward in future kind of a Batman Beyond kind of era. And it's Batman, Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman centered story, but with lots of kind of cameos from both past and future DC and DC folks. I don't know. I like that it's a time travel thing that has, it's like we're going to go in the past and the future. That's what I want in time travel, is both ways. you know,
I think it actually does work kind of standalone. There are obvious references to things that have happened for the pasts of these characters, but yeah, I think it's still pretty satisfying on its own.
Mm-hmm. It's got that bit where Green Lantern turns into Hal Jordan and he just says, "I'm up to speed,
carry on.
Yeah. I'm a professional, you jerks."
Yeah. Green Lantern, one of the most competent superheroes, fiercely competent compared to some other jerks who got tights.
I already said my episodes, but I'll say them again. Patriot Act, an episode that focuses exclusively on like D-list superheroes and Green Arrow, is a lot of fun. And the Great Brain Robbery,
yeah.
It's just an enormous amount of fun.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite episodes is, even though it doesn't feature any original seven characters, is Kid Stuff, because they actually make the effort to try to extrapolate. Sure, shrink Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern. What are they going to be like as kids? they get Superman being, you know, back to, you know, happy-go-lucky, wide-eyed Kansas farm boy. Wonder Woman kind of takes charge. She's the big sister. She's going to, like, you know, boys, come on, we got to get ourselves together. Batman's snarky sort of loner behavior turns them into like a brat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Green Lantern is apparently, like, up for whatever reason, sort of younger than the others. And he's, you know, quick to act out accordingly.
And so, he's got astigmatism.
Yes, exactly. Yes, he has to conjure up some nice green glasses so that he can see. So, you know, I really like, you know, how they play with the characters that way in that specific episode. I'd say one of my favorites, characters that hasn't been mentioned yet is Zatanna. In part, she's a character I first ran into when I was reading Wonder Woman comics decades ago. They did like this 5-part series where they brought in as many of the female DC characters as they could for this one giant arc. And she was a big part of that. And then I like never saw her again until she pops up in the Batman animated series briefly. And so I was very happy to see her again, even though the episode that she's the most part of, This Little Piggy, is not one of my favorites.
I just want to also call out the relationship between Vixen and Shayera, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. Hawkgirl, in, I guess, later season 2 and in season 3, where mm-hmm. really it very much, like, this show very much becomes like a workplace comedy, drama/comedy, where all of these people just kind of work and live together, and like it gets very like Melrose Placey. It's awesome. I love it.
Melrose Placey.
Speaking of Hawkgirl, I thought Justice League Unlimited does a really good job of trying to figure out what Hawkman and Hawkgirl's deals are.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It gets really complicated, but they do a good job of it. As for me, I want to I want to celebrate Double Date as well. With the Huntress and Question and Green Arrow and Black Canary. Every once in a while, the superheroes just get a little too super, and you've got, you know, the only superpower among the group is Black Canary's scream. Other than that, it's just the four street level heroes clashing with each other bantering at each other. And I think that they are just delightful. What do Question and Huntress see in each other? Do we really want to know? Does it feel pretty creepy and lit? Yeah, we're proud of those kids at the same time. Yes, yes, and yes.
How does she even kiss him? He has no face.
It's a mask, right?
Yes. Yeah, you use an aerosol to get it off. No
yeah.
problem.
So, yeah.
She's seen other mouths. She knows where they are.
Yeah.
So there is a fantastic DC animated universe out there, but these 39 episodes, bite-sized chunks, 22 minutes apiece, I highly recommend them, and I think the rest of the panel does too. So say we all?
So say we all.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to The Incomparable Mothership. I have been your host, Chip Sutterth. Tony Sindelar, thank you for yielding the Batman University chair for this episode.
Batman and his coworkers belong to all of us, Chip. Thank you for having me. Goodbye, nerds.
Cicero, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Chip. My team does not quit, and neither do I.
Shannon Sutterth, thanks for walking into the other room of our house and recording this with us.
Always a pleasure.
And Monty Ashley, thank you, sir, as well.
Justice League Assemble, Chip.
And we will see you next week on The Incomparable. Bye-bye.